hold very dear and important to them. And they have come at really a sacrifice to them. They've had to travel 5 hours to get here. Many of them have had to miss a day or two of work. They've had to make special arrangements for their families. And this is, even though they gave this presentation to the Attorneys General, it was not open to the media. And so this is the first time where they've really come out publicly and expressed these views. I personally greatly appreciate their willingness to do this. There will be 8 ladies that will be the presenters. The first one will give you a little background and history of Centennial Park so that you'll know a little bit about it. For those of you, just quickly, who are unfamiliar with the term, it's a community that was started in 1986 approximately. And the reason it's called Centennial is because it's 100 years since the 1886 revelation to John Taylor. They separated from Colorado City Hilldale and formed a community of their own called Centennial Park. It's just about a mile or two further south on the Arizona side of the border. And Joyce, who's going to give the first remarks, will tell you a little bit about their community so you'll become more familiar with the people there. this session will not be recorded at their request, and we do have somebody from their community that has been given permission to video it. So if you see that, you'll know it's authorized. also, they do not want their last names used, so we will respect that. First names in order of their presentations are Joyce, Joanne, Ruth, Lorene, Susan, Aaron, Polly, and Amy. And it is now my privilege and indeed an honor to introduce you to the Centennial Park ladies. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne, and thank you everyone for being here. Can you hear me okay in the back? Okay. A year ago, as media attention grew and salacious stories swirled about the deviant behavior of practicing polygamists, 100 women from our community traveled to St. George to attend a polygamy summit meeting being held by the Utah and Arizona Attorneys General, along with Canadian officials. I was in attendance that day, and this statement, made 134 years ago by Eliza R. Snow, describes our feeling and motivation exactly. Were we the stupid, degraded, heartbroken beings that we have been represented, silence might better become us. We not only speak because we have the right, but justice and humanity demand that we should. At this summit meeting, it became evident that the very people being discussed were not represented. In order to address the issues at hand, they had to have a greater understanding of those actually living polygamy. Through his contact with the Voices in Harmony group, Mark Shurtleff invited us to meet with him, the Arizona Attorney General, and other state agencies. We realized this was an unprecedented opportunity. In September of last year, we prepared and delivered to them the presentation you will hear today. Please keep in mind this presentation was made for the benefit of the Attorneys General, DCFS of Utah, CPS of Arizona, and other state government agencies. We realize that you ladies and gentlemen are none of these agencies, but we are asked to give the same presentation today that we gave them. Since then, Voices in Harmony has worked with us to organize ourselves into an action committee. We have traveled to the Arizona State Capitol to lobby on bills concerning polygamy. A small group of our citizens were invited to attend a monthly panel meeting hosted by DES, also attended by family services, law enforcement, and other state agencies, with the objective of coordinating state and county efforts to ensure a social safety net in the southern Utah and northern Arizona communities. We come from a small community, Centennial Park, Arizona, established in 1986. Though many of our congregation lived once or still do live in Colorado City, we have never been members of the FLDS Church, which was established about 1990. Keep in mind that we represent only the fundamentalist group in Centennial Park, Arizona, even though many of the other groups have these same concerns. We believe in the same organization that existed in the early Mormon church. Our clergy labor individually and severally to provide teaching, guidance, and spiritual instruction. We are taught that no person should exercise unrighteous dominion over another. We do not feel shame for our lifestyle and beliefs. We assert that plural marriage is an enduring and very beneficial, an enduring social order and very beneficial to a people who embrace its ennobling attributes. There is dignity in plural marriage, not scandal. Our principles can only flourish through free choice, not coercion. The Book of Mormon teaches that when God wants a righteous seed raised up unto him, he will command it. Through the prophet Joseph Smith, God did command it. The LDS Church finds itself in an unfortunate position of apologizing for its polygamous heritage. Some pass it off as being an experimental social order or a mistake, no less. We do not apologize for plural marriage being a part of the church's rich, noble beginnings. We take pride in this unique diversity. We feel it was a commandment from God through the prophet Joseph Smith. The church Joseph Smith organized represents the first originally American church. In the true American spirit, Utah was second in the nation to grant women the right to vote. At the time of the passage of the female suffrage bill, tens of thousands of Utah women held grand mass meetings throughout the state to confirm and maintain plural marriage. And in their vast assemblages, they were manifestly exercising their right to vote. In a filled-to-capacity tabernacle in January 1870, one of Brigham Young's wives, Harriet Cook Young, stated, "It is true that a corrupt press and a corrupt priestcraft are leagued against us, and that they have pandered to the ignorance of the masses and vilified our institutions to the degree that it has become popular to believe that the Latter-day Saints are unworthy to live. But it is also true that there are many, very many right-thinking men who are not without influence in the nation. And to such do we now most earnestly appeal. Let the united forces of this assembly give the lie to the popular clamor that the women of Utah are oppressed and held bondage. Let the world know that the women of Utah prefer virtue to vice. Every woman of Utah may have her husband, the husband of her choice. Here we are taught not to destroy our children, but to preserve them, for they, reared in the path of virtue and trained in righteousness, constitute our true glory. It is no wish to accuse our sisters who are not of our faith that we so speak, but we are dealing with the facts as they exist. Wherever monogamy reigns, adultery, prostitution, and feticide, directly and indirectly, are its concomitants. The women of Utah comprehend this, and they see in the plurality of wives, the only safeguard against adultery, prostitution, and the reckless waste of prenatal life." End quote. Does this sound like a stupid, degraded, heartbroken being to you? Some strong testimonies such as this of our early brethren and sisters fill pages, if not volumes, of our church history book. Today we offer this, our presentation given to the attorneys general and state agencies, and we, too, make our solemn appeal to all right-thinking people that the liberties of mankind not be trampled by hate groups and the popular clamor. Thank you. I turn the time to Joanne now.
Good morning. Ladies and gentlemen, polygamy does not equal abuse. Monogamy does not equal abuse. In numerous studies, abuse crosses all ethnic, racial, age, national origin, sexual orientation, religious, and socioeconomic lines. I am currently the healthcare practitioner in the community of Centennial Park, but I have also worked several years in clinics in Galveston, Texas, Salt Lake County, and Washington County. I have had the unique opportunity to observe and interact with families inside of the Centennial Park community as well as outside of it. To begin, I want to ensure that we have similar definitions of what constitutes abuse. Child abuse is any human action that causes injury to children and is preventable. The definition of child abuse is physical or mental injury, sexual abuse or exploitation, maltreatment or neglect of a child. According to most national statistics, neglect represents the most common type of reported and substantiated form of maltreatment. In 1999, Child Protective Services confirmed 1,400 fatalities from child abuse and neglect. That's nearly 4 children every day. However, many aspects of child abuse are hard to pinpoint due to the fact that many cases go unreported. This is a serious impediment to resolution of this national and global problem. A team of UCLA scientists found strong evidence that children who grow up in abusive families often suffer from lifelong illness, such as cancer, heart disease, hypertension, diabetes, obesity, as well as early death. Children who grow up in risky families are more likely as teenagers and adults to engage in drug and alcohol abuse, smoking, risky sexual behavior, and aggressive antisocial behavior. These children are also more prone to suicide. Clinical findings of adult victims of sexual abuse include problems with interpersonal relationships associated with an underlying mistrust. Generally, adult victims of incest have a severely strained relationship with their parents that is marked by feelings of mistrust, fear, ambivalence, hatred, and betrayal. Guilt is experienced by almost all victims. The care and protection of children are not just acts of sentimental altruism. In 2001, Prevent Child Abuse America, a national prevention agency based in Chicago, calculated the economic costs associated with child maltreatment. The total came to $94 billion each year. That is $1,400 a year per family in the United States. Of course, they were not able to measure the incalculable cost to each child victim and to society. However, preventing child maltreatment must be the main goal. Current federal spending on prevention programs is only $1.06 per family annually. Ladies and gentlemen, you may wonder that I make the argument for you why abuse should be intolerable. It is because we in the Centennial Park community agree with you. Child abuse cannot be accepted or condoned. But our interest is much more compelling than yours. You see, these children are our children. We understand that abuse is like a virus. It attacks the host organism and alters it. It then self-replicates. Abuse creates a downward spiral through generations, each victim more likely to victimize others. Abuse and its devastating effects are not just an individual or a family problem. It is a cultural problem, a national problem, a global problem. We understand this very well. If our culture is to survive, we must not succumb to the moral, spiritual, and physical evils that plague other societies. We know that our children are our greatest resource and asset. Do not believe for one moment that we want this virus of abuse among us. So the question must be asked, Do we in our congregation have abuse among us? If abuse knows no ethnic, racial, age, national origin, sexual orientation, religious, or socioeconomic boundaries, that means that it is present in varying degrees wherever humans live in contact with one another. Why would we be any exception? My argument is this, that abuse is no more prevalent in our society than in the communities around us. My experience in providing health care to this community is that the people in this community love and care for their children with a passion unequaled anywhere else where I have interacted with parents and children. Child rearing is a predominant theme in this religious community. When I first came to work in Centennial Park, access to medical care was difficult, primarily due to the remote location of the community. Immunization rates were low, and prenatal care was generally inadequate. Through a careful process of education, immunization rates in this congregation are now 85%, and good prenatal care is the norm. This group of people respond extraordinarily well to education and accurate information. For 9 years, I have performed well-child exams on infants and young toddler-aged children. In that time, I had 2 separate incidences where a mother came to see me about suspected abuse of her children. I referred these women to the appropriate resources. For the past 5 years, the elementary schools have required kindergarten physicals before entrance into school. I have never come across one incidence of suspected abuse, either physical or sexual, in this age group. The children are joyous, intelligent, socially adept, and eager to learn. The parents I see put a great deal of effort into their children. Their children are clean, well-fed, and well-behaved when they come into my office. Neglect is definitely not a word I would use to describe these children. I move now to the subject of underage marriage or sex with a minor. Let me first state that this congregation does not approve or condone sex with a minor. Let's look at some statistics from the Office of Vital Statistics in both Utah and Arizona. Before reviewing these numbers, I want to acknowledge a few things. First, that I have no actual statistics for the people in the religious congregation of Centennial Park nor their families. This community is a very small population subset, so statistics are of somewhat limited value anyway. Secondly, I understand that statistics of birth do not equal statistics regarding sex. However, since the women in this congregation do not typically practice standard methods of birth control, it is with some degree of certainty that I extrapolate from these numbers and make some conclusions about sex with minors based on birth information. You have some handouts, hopefully, in front of you. If you can turn to the first handout entitled Births by Mother's Age Group of Community and County. These numbers represent births to mothers in the following age categories. Under age 15, ages 15 through 17, and ages 18 through 19. As you can see from these numbers, Centennial Park numbers in the under age 15 and the age 15 to 17 category are zero. And the Colorado City numbers are our neighbor. Those numbers are zero in the underage 15 category and 3 in the 15 to 17 category. These numbers they're pretty much in line with the 2 counties that we border or that we are a part of, given the fact that there are bigger numbers in those counties. They are certainly not outside of the numbers you see. The second chart, if you turn to the second chart, is entitled Births to Unwed Mothers, taken from Arizona Vital Statistics 2002. Please note that unwed mothers in this community refer to women unmarried in the eyes of the law, but not considered unwed by this community. As you can see on this chart and the subsequent chart, births to unwed mothers is far below the county numbers on this chart and on the following chart, chart number 3, far below state and national levels. So turn to the third chart, please. You see those numbers, birth rate per 100 females age 15 to 17, far below Mojave County, Arizona, and national levels. As a separate but interesting note, look at the rates for Arizona Medicaid, indicated by access on your graph. Arizona Medicaid compared with the rest. And especially of interest is the rate of private insurance compared with the rest. This means that these families are predominantly paying for pregnancy and delivery of their children themselves. Okay, moving on. Brigham Young taught that the most important thing a woman takes to her marriage is her chastity. So the vast majority of our youth do not have sex prior to marriage. The Centennial Park congregation believes that a girl under the age of 18 typically does not have the experience and the understanding to enter into the very serious commitment of marriage. There is no forcing of underage women into marriage. Many people tend to focus on the subject of sex in this issue, meaning that a marriage does not seem so much the issue as that a man has sex with his 16 or 17-year-old wife. I find it ironic that it is okay for the youth of this country to engage in sexual activity. But the youth in this community are denied that same activity because a marriage took place. According to recently enacted laws in both states, both Utah and Arizona, not all 15, 16, and 17-year-old girls are created equal. Apparently, polygamous teen girls are somehow inherently different from their monogamous teen counterparts. I worked for Planned Parenthood in Salt Lake City for several years prior to working in Centennial Park. I was appalled at the recurrent story of the young girls, ages 10 through 17, coming through that clinic, that I saw coming through that clinic. Many of these girls said they had been raped or at least coerced into sex while under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Most of them said that their sexual partners then cast them off. They felt abused and discarded. Should I have reported to the authorities every young girl coming through that clinic and let the police investigate the ages of these girls' partners? Planned Parenthood's policy was, of course, strict confidentiality, which I followed. And yet a girl 16 or 17 years old who lives in a polygamous society and wants to have sex with the person of her choice, but doesn't want to do this without a marriage, is not allowed sexual activity. It is discrimination and hypocrisy. Due to recent efforts by community leaders, the people in this congregation are well aware of their responsibilities about recognizing and reporting any suspected abuse. In large families with multiple mothers, child abuse is hard to keep hidden. There are so many more adults available to observe and report abuse and to intervene immediately to preserve a child. 4 or 5 years ago, the principal of the private high school in Centennial Park invited Child Protective Services into the school to educate the teachers regarding their responsibility towards abuse. I know that all of the teaching and nursing staff in both public elementary schools understand their responsibility about reporting abuse. I am very aware of my professional responsibility to report abuse I suspect. There are many resources in this community for children, including religious leaders, teachers and bus drivers, healthcare providers, a school psychologist, and a private licensed social worker, a psychiatrist, school nurses, preschool services like TLC and Child Find, parenting classes, and organizations like Alcoholics Anonymous. And last but not least, the resource of loving and involved parents who care where their children are at night and strive by precept and example to live clean, honest lives. One of our teachers was recently in Denver, Colorado with a group of students from the Future Business Leaders of America. They were told at their conference to be off a certain street by 9 o'clock p.m. because that is when the homeless children of the area came into the street to look for food. The amount of children who are homeless and drifting in this country is appalling. Within the Centennial Park community, there is no such thing as lost boys who have been abandoned without benefit of education or family support. Such a thing would be unthinkable. There is no evidence that physical or sexual abuse occurs in our community in greater proportions than anywhere else. And the much-publicized underage marriage sex with a minor problem seems to me less a problem here than in the surrounding counties and states at large. The accusation that abuse and sexual molestation of young teen girls occurs more in polygamous societies than in monogamous societies simply does not appear to be true. The women in the Centennial Park congregation are over the age of 18 when they marry, and the women marry with full choice. Please consider these issues carefully and without prejudice. I invite you to look at the facts I've tried to portray honestly here, instead of listening to embittered people who have had nothing to do with these communities for many years. Abuse should be prosecuted on a case-by-case basis, not by singling out the polygamous culture. And when these crimes are prosecuted, they must be prosecuted equally across both states in other towns and cities where it is possible that the problem is more severe. Ladies and gentlemen, polygamy does not equal abuse. Thank you for your attention. Please welcome the next presenter, Ruth.
Ladies and gentlemen, polygamy does not equal fraud. Many men and women in Utah, Arizona, and Idaho have polygamous ancestors. These pioneers were patriotic, self-sufficient, industrious, and raised honorable families. They felt strongly about their values and principles, and many gave their life to defend their faith. These men and women are revered across religious lines as valiant pioneer stock. I am proud and honored to be part of a posterity who held tightly to their beliefs, regardless of persecution and discrimination of people in this state and nation. I had the privilege of growing up in a large polygamous family. My parents passed on the same values of community, country, that our pioneer ancestors had. I grew up with the understanding that to be part of a large family came with responsibility. To achieve our common goals required cooperation of the whole. Our means were meager, but we were healthy and well provided for. We lived off the family garden in the summer and enjoyed the fruits of our labor throughout the winter. Seeking government assistance was not an option for us. Today, our culture is repeatedly accused of welfare fraud and tax evasion. Welfare use in our society was unheard of until the 40s and 50s, when the government jailed the man and ripped women and children from their homes and made them wards of the state. Today, there are some out of necessity who use government assistance, but we do not believe in bleeding the beast. In our culture, we are encouraged to be self-sufficient and industrious. In surveying a sample of our congregation, few, if any, use food stamps or cash assistance. We have a strong belief in God as our provider and great physician, and strive to use faith and common sense in caring for our children. We do have an accredited local clinic built and supported by our community who does not receive public funds. This clinic cares for our families and occasionally refers additional medical care. In order to meet these additional costs, some have had to use the medical benefits offered through the state. Rising medical costs have been front page news across the nation for years. Presently, there are 252,000 children uninsured in Arizona. Many legislators have actively promoted a national health insurance program to combat the inability of families to obtain adequate health coverage. In this respect, our community is no different than any other in the nation. I am a medical professional, and you would be surprised how many slanderous remarks I hear about polygamists. This out of ignorance. Those who have applied for medical assistance often are pressured by caseworkers to accept more assistance than what was applied for. This is because of qualifying criteria. It is the state, not us, that sets the policies and criteria for qualifying for state assistance. Those who do use assistance make every effort to comply with the rules and regulations for the Department of Economic Security and honestly disclose the information requested. A supervisor from DES Family Assistance stated that our people in our area have been honest in the reporting to that agency. When asked about cases of fraud, we were told there are not any. They did, however, tell us that they would investigate and prosecute cases if found. In speaking with these agencies, we were told that the areas bordering Utah and Arizona actually underutilize services available. They explained that the dollar numbers for the services provided may seem large, but to break it down proportionately, it is the same as any family of six in Arizona. Regarding tax evasion, we view ourselves as law-abiding citizens. Our employers are registered and reporting entities, and our taxes are handled the same as mainstream America. We spend our income in both Arizona and Utah, which means that we support these economies and pay taxes into both of these states. As Americans, every household pays property tax. Our property tax is the highest in Mojave County and one of the highest in the state of Arizona, at over $13 per $1,000 of assessed home value. Much of this tax money goes to support a public school district that very few of our children attend. The majority of our high school students attend a private academy, which has been in operation since 1960. Over the years, hundreds of students have successfully graduated from this institution. It has been entirely sustained by student tuition, not public funds, thus saving the state millions of dollars over the years. Most of our elementary and junior high students attend a charter school in a state-of-the-art facility also built by our community. In our society, we highly value education. Ladies and gentlemen, sadly enough, we recognize there is welfare and tax fraud in general society, just as there is physical, emotional, and sexual abuses. There are laws already in existence to investigate and prosecute these cases. We ask that they be enforced uniformly and not targeted against a specific group of people. Our chosen beliefs and lifestyle teach us to be honest, self-reliant, responsible, and performing our civic duties. If there is fraud within our ranks, that is a character flaw of the individuals, not a doctrine of our faith. Ladies and gentlemen, polygamy does not equal fraud. I would like to turn the time to Laureen. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, polygamy does not equal ignorance. The tapestry against polygamy alleges that fundamentalist women are ignorant, uneducated, and without opportunity, a grossly mistaken generality. To refute this claim, I have with me a few statistics to present to you on the educational accomplishments of the women of Centennial Park. I present myself to you today as an example of the educational experience of many of the women of our congregation. Although the individual experiences may vary, the dedication to the acquisition of knowledge is constant. To begin, I, like many women of my culture, was raised in a literate family, immersed in books from my earliest recollection. To see my parents reading was commonplace in our home. My childhood was filled with a multitude of literature, classic and contemporary, fiction and non. Literacy is a building block to the acquisition of knowledge and of utmost importance to the parents of our community. We declare as a primary tenet of our religion the statement of the prophet Joseph Smith, quote, "Man is saved no faster than he gains knowledge," end quote. I was educated in the public school system. After seventh grade, I was determined to attend the school of my choice. I chose to attend our private high school. Each summer, during my high school years, I, following cultural tradition, worked diligently to earn the tuition required for admittance. The opportunity to fund my own education increased the value I received. The educational systems in our community work closely together to provide opportunities wherein students may challenge their academic abilities. As a senior, I, along with many peers, took advantage of concurrent enrollment offered through the Mojave Community College Early Start Program. At high school graduation, I was 1 year away from an associate's degree. I later enrolled in Southern Utah University. My university experience, similar to others of my sisters, differed from most of my classmen in that I carried the full responsibility of my education expenses. While other students enjoyed sororities and dorm parties, I worked full-time to pay for books and tuition expenses. I found that many of my peers struggled to acquire study skills and habits I had mastered back in high school. These skills and habits culminated in a 3.94 GPA. I graduated summa cum laude and was awarded recognition as the outstanding student in English. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here today in an effort to dispel a widespread belief that we women are uninformed, victimized, brainwashed, ignorant, and abused. This accusation is false and itself the result of ignorance. A wise man once stated, quote, "There is a mental attitude which is a bar against all information, which is a bar against all argument, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That mental attitude is condemnation before investigation," end quote. From the adults of Centennial Park, we have pulled some statistics that will illustrate the obvious value that exists in our community toward education. Please refer to the chart labeled Education in your handout packet. This chart lists the percentages of educational accomplishments for Centennial Park, Mojave County, the state of Arizona, and the nation. These statistics were taken from the U.S. Census Bureau 2000, the Arizona Minority Education Policy Analysis Center, and a 2003 Centennial Park sample for our local congregation. For those individuals with some college credit, The percentage for all our culture is 63%, while the state of Arizona is 25%. Of those individuals awarded associate degrees, Centennial Park is 28%, Arizona 7%. Of those individuals awarded a bachelor degree or higher, Centennial Park 27%, Mojave County 10%, Arizona as a whole 14%, and the nation 24%. As you can see from the chart, Centennial Park is well within average for high school graduates and significantly higher than the state in the other categories. Chart 2. This compares the ratio of female to male high school graduates in our local congregation. From our surveyed adult population, 60% of the recipients of a high school diploma are female and 40% are male. Moving on to chart 3. In comparing the higher educational accomplishments of the women to men in our local congregation, we discovered that 73% of the bachelor or greater degrees were awarded to women, while 27% were awarded to men. And they say we're brainwashed. How can we be brainwashed? We're smarter than the men. Continuing to chart 4. These statistics were taken from a survey of our local congregation in 2002-2003 and compared to the registered voter statistics from 2000-2002 for the state. Our survey revealed that the voting age population in our culture, 66% are registered voters, a bit shy of the registered voters listed for the voting age population in the state. However, of those registered voters, 47.6% voted in the 2002 elections, a 6% lead over the state for the same election. Chart 5 provides a survey for employment statistics in our culture, and it reveals that 54% of our adult population is female, and of that 54%, 79% are employed. Finally, Chart 6 reveals that out of more than 100 households surveyed, 75% have internet access, 69% subscribe to daily newspapers, and 76% have satellite TV. I think that's a little bit shy, too. Most homes have two or three dishes. These numbers show that our local congregation has more than adequate access to current events. The accomplishments of the ladies in our culture are not limited to academia. In our congregation, there are successful entrepreneurs, nationally competitive grant writers, education administrators, business administrators, an attorney, a nurse practitioner, teachers, journalists, trained special education professionals, and exceptional healthcare professionals. But we value as most important the multi-talented women operating on the home front. These women specialize in child growth and development, working diligently to prepare young minds for entrance into society. We agree with the conclusion of Socrates, quote, "Whom do I call educated? First, those who manage well the circumstances they encounter day by day. Next, those who are decent and honorable in their intercourse with all men, bearing easily and good-naturedly what is offense in others, and being as agreeable and reasonable to their associates as is humanly possible to be. Those who hold their pleasures always under control and are not ultimately overcome by their misfortunes. Those who are not spoiled by their successes, who do not desert their true selves, but hold their ground steadfastly as wise and sober-minded men." End quote. Again, we appeal. Polygamy does not equal ignorance. Thank you, and please welcome the next presenter, Susan.
Thank you, Lori. Ladies and gentlemen, polygamy does equal support. Years ago, a lady from a television news went on to say to her, intent and well-educated. He went on to say to her that it is the women like her who will supply the strongest testament to our way of life, simply by the example that we live. And I do believe this, that the bridge to span that chasm will not be built by our words, but will be built by our example. The example we set before our God in heaven and before all those who have eyes to witness it. Ladies and gentlemen, polygamy does equal support. Thank you. I turn the time to Aaron.
Ladies and gentlemen, polygamy does equal opportunity. Plural marriage, a basic tenet of our religion, as restored by Joseph Smith, is protected under the First Amendment of the Constitution. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. We as a people, first and foremost, practice plural marriage because it's one of our beliefs. But through the practice, we have recognized that it creates many opportunities encompassing every facet of our lives, from childhood to old age. The oft-used statement, "It takes a village to raise a child," is valid, but not easily brought to fruition in modern-day society. In plural marriage, the village is the home itself, with a father, many brothers and sisters, mothers, and at times grandparents, all residing in the same household. A child's life is shaped by the opportunity of having the input of diverse age groups, personalities, and outlooks, all focused on the same common goal, the well-being of the child. Our children's daycare needs are met inside the home. They have the opportunity of being cared for in a familiar and loving environment by family members, should their mother be required to work in order to assist with financial needs. Our divorce rate is almost non-existent when compared with societies in general. Allowing our children the opportunity for a stable and structured home life, thus decreasing the potential for many social and emotional issues inherent with single-parent households. The results of studies have borne out time and again the ramifications of these situations: an increase in juvenile delinquency, suicide, teen pregnancy, drug use, and behavioral problems. One of the most favorable opportunities presented to a woman in polygamous society is one that's singularly sought by a large majority of the female population: to be married to the man of her choice. As is often the case, an existing family need not suffer a breakup for this to be accomplished, should a woman desire to join with a man already married. A woman unable to conceive is not left bereft and childless, but is encouraged to fulfill that part of her life by becoming involved with the children of other mothers. Our women are also assured that their husbands will claim and care for all his wives and children, not being forced to conceal one relationship from another, as is necessary for a monogamous man who finds himself caught in his society's dilemma. There are upwards of 10 million single mothers in the United States alone. And for the most part, they, as a necessity, have to work outside the home, play the role of both parents, and carry on the numerous tasks of maintaining a household, mostly without a good support system in place. In our society, a woman is given the opportunity of choosing to work or stay at home. Should she desire to pursue higher education or outside employment, she has built-in emotional and physical support from other women. She also doesn't suffer the added stress of daycare expenses and the daily uprooting of her children from their familiar surroundings. The mother who chooses to stay at home, on the other hand, need not sacrifice the opportunity to acquire the extras and security an additional income provides. In some circumstances, the women choose to switch roles, giving them each an opportunity to experience the satisfaction these options afford. thus avoiding burnout from their routine responsibilities. Now I need to take a drink. Excuse me. They are also given much needed assistance at times of childbirth, sickness, the loss of loved ones, etc. Something to be envied by those who have had to face these circumstances all on their own. Plural marriage offers the opportunity of peace of mind to our elderly. They don't have to plan years in advance to afford long-term care, nor do they stress the coffers of state assistance. Be they male or female, when they can no longer function independently, the opportunity exists for them to be cared for in their own home by younger women or their children. With an extended family network, the time and expense of this doesn't solely rest upon one member, as is many times the case in smaller family units, but is distributed equally to all involved. Our elderly also have the opportunity to be viewed as a valuable resource of life experience and wisdom to their posterity, not as useless burdens. Were I to be approached by someone today saying, "There's an opportunity available for you to have a better life," I would have to look them in the eye and reply, "I've experienced for myself the life of which you speak, and there is no better life than what I've chosen here and now." Ladies and gentlemen, polygamy does equal opportunity. Thank you. We'll now turn the time to Polly.
I was hoping this mic would make it down before I got up here. Ladies and gentlemen, polygamy is a constitutionally protected freedom. My purpose here today is to provide an insight into our expectations about the defense of our religion, based on the inalienable rights articulated by the Constitution. I welcome this opportunity for a free and open exchange of ideas. To speak freely is to live freely. Thomas Jefferson declared, "I have sworn on the altar of God eternal hostility against any form of tyranny over the mind of man," end quote. We, as America's citizens, must be the guardians of her liberties. It is our sacred right and solemn duty. We hold our freedoms as dearly as we cherish life itself, for what is life without them? First, let me say, as many of the other presenters have said also, that we women are not victims. We are not brainwashed and incapable of making an educated choice. This stereotype, frankly, offends us. We have examined the world scene, its headlines, and its New Age lifestyles. We ask, why would we give up our full lives for a no-fault divorce, more crime, and more of society's daily lament? What is it that these bitter groups such as Tapestry want for us? A husband all to ourselves? For how long? A few years? We have men now who have made eternal commitments and who we can trust will not abandon our families. Do these so-called defenders want to fill our lives with emptiness? We're aware our lifestyle is not for everyone. For those who wish to leave, they need to leave it behind and make a choice, make a life that mirrors their choice. For those who go, but before they go, they really should read the newspaper. The pain and the suffering that they blame their problems on are no respecter of persons and can be found across the world. For example, a 2003 federal report cites that one In 5, adult women in the state of Utah have been forcibly raped at least once. Current census figures show that 19.7 million children live in America today with only one parent, 40.3% of whom live with a mother who has never been married. In our Centennial Park congregation, divorce is rare and unwed mothers are non-existent. Our rescuers need to quit assuming we need rescuing. America celebrates her diversity, and the Constitution serves as a protectorate of her complex social structures and customs. Yet, if an accusation is made that a dishonorable person happens to be associated with a fundamentalist group, then all fundamentalists are branded by that single misbehavior. Following this assumption that polygamy creates abuse and therefore should be criminal, we would have to outlaw monogamy and celibacy, gays, sexual relations before and outside of marriage, because abuses have been documented in each of these types of relationships. Just because there are pedophiles in the Catholic Church, should Catholicism be outlawed by legislation? Of course not. Quoting from Wisconsin versus Yoder, Justice Berger said, quote, "A religion is a religion, irrespective of what misdemeanor or what the misdemeanor or felony records of its members might be." End quote. I don't envy the attorneys general their job. A recent headline in the Arizona Republic read, "Mother prostitutes." I'm sorry, I can't get past this story ever. As many times as I've seen these words. A mother prostitutes her 13-year-old for drugs. And the question begs to be asked, did anyone check up on the age of her customers? Does anybody even care? A follow-up article on teenage prostitution in Phoenix displayed a glaring expose of society's current ills. We must be ever vigilant in fighting for and preserving the rights of children, the most vulnerable of all of our citizens. And we agree with attacking these problems where they occur, but it can be done without dismantling the Constitution and its guarantee of religious freedom and due process. Commenting on recent allegations against polygamous societies, the editorial staff of the Southern Utah Spectrum recently stated, quote, "Those societal ills are not a result of polygamy." And we certainly agree with the Spectrum's editorial conclusion, quote, "We can support those who wish to pursue the sanctity of multiple marriages among consenting adults as a form of religious freedom," end quote. I, as a teacher, along with my associates, have spent my life pursuing and sharing a kaleidoscope of knowledge. Education is a passion and a joy, the very foundation of freedom's edifice. We feel that the most important education for our children is the teachings of our faith, the right to transfer the beliefs and values of our culture is protected by the Constitution and given additional voice in Wisconsin versus Yoder, which states in part, quote, "The state's interest is not totally free from a balancing process when it impinges on other fundamental rights and the traditional interests of parents with respect to the religious upbringing of their children," end quote. In addition to governmental intrusion into cultural transfer, the courts have made clear other restrictions upon the government with regard to our freedom of association. In the landmark ruling, Griswold versus Connecticut, and in the court's recent decision, Lawrence versus Texas, we see this principle clearly emphasized. Justice Kennedy, delivering the majority opinion in Lawrence, said, "Freedom extends beyond spatial bounds. Liberty presumes an autonomy of self That includes freedom of thought, belief, expression, and certain intimate conduct. End quote. The Lawrence Doctrine delineates that the majoritarian views of morality are not a permissible basis upon which to regulate relationships and practices. Justice O'Connor, in her concurrence of Lawrence, said, quote, a law branding one class of persons as criminals solely based on the state's moral disapproval of that class and the conduct associated with that class runs contrary to the values of the Constitution and the Equal Protection Clause under any standard of review. On the subject of morality, I have something to add. Hugh Hefner made the cover of Fortune Small Business last September. The caption reads, Hugh Hefner, he launched a revolution, one playboy at a time. The article states that Hef is, quote, the luckiest guy on the planet and has 7 live-in girlfriends. A publishing icon with the morals of an alley cat, but who cares? At least he's not marrying any of these women or giving them a commitment. The former president of the United States has extramarital sex in the White House, and the Senate looked the other way, mumbling, boys will be boys. But if a man in our culture wants to give women a home, love them, love their children, and support them, he is branded a criminal. Is it any wonder that we're appalled and a little confused at the government and the people's moral judgments of us? In the Lawrence ruling, Justice Kennedy ended by addressing the vision of the Constitution's founders. He said, they knew that times combined us to certain truths, and later generations can see that laws once thought necessary and proper, in fact, only serve to oppress. As the Constitution endures, persons in every generation can invoke its principles in their own search for greater freedom. End quote. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here today to continue that search for freedom and seek the elimination of outdated artifacts of injustice, prejudice, and religious intolerance. The Reynolds decision is a conspicuous example of an outdated artifact wherein an inalienable right was compromised through compelling interest legislation. The essential argument in Reynolds is that the religious belief alone is protected. Grounded in the prevailing moral disapproval of Mormons, Reynolds opined that although religious thought and belief were protected freedoms, the free exercise of a religious mandated belief was not. In other words, we can believe in the teachings of the prophet Joseph Smith, but the government must decide whether or not to allow us our religious sacraments. We ask you, what good is a freedom without the free exercise thereof? And what is a belief that can never be acted upon? Come with me, if you will, to a December evening in 1955, when a brave young black woman entered a bus in Montgomery, Alabama, and sat down in the front. That night, Rosa Parks was arrested for breaking an unjust law. Applying the Reynolds Doctrine to the Rosa Parks case would have gone something like this. It is, of course, acknowledged by the court that defendant Rosa Parks certainly has the constitutionally protected right to imagine she's sitting at the front of the bus. She may even assert the solemn belief that she's sitting at the front of the bus. But to act on that belief is an odious criminal felony punishable to the fullest extent of the law for that one simple act of civil disobedience. Rosa Parks is now a national hero and a recipient of the Medal of Freedom, as well she should be. In Wisconsin versus Yoder, Justice Douglas referred to the Reynolds decision stating, quote, in the Reynolds case, it was conceded that polygamy was a part of the religion of the Mormons. Action which the Reynolds court deemed to be antisocial could be punished, even though it was grounded on deeply held and religious convictions. What we do today in regard to Wisconsin versus Yoder, at least in this respect, opens the way to give organized religion a broader base than it has ever enjoyed, and it even promises that in time, Reynolds will be overruled. Ladies and gentlemen, I suggest to you, Reynolds is a pathetic anachronism of social legislation from a bygone era and must and will fall. Martin Luther King's words serve as a beacon of hope for us today. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men would be guaranteed the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We are here today to redeem that promise for ourselves and for generations to come. In conclusion, we turn to the words of President John F. Kennedy. This nation was founded by men of many nations and backgrounds. It was founded on the principle that all men are created equal and that the rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened. And this nation, for all of its hopes and all of its boasts, will not be fully free until all of its citizens are free. Ladies and gentlemen, polygamy is a constitutionally protected freedom. Thank you, and please welcome Amy.
Grab some water really quick. Morning, everyone. My name is Amy, and I live in St. George, Utah, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come here and speak today and to really stand shoulder to shoulder with the women of Centennial Park, whom I have come to love, admire, and most of all, respect. I was not born or raised in polygamy. However, I was born and raised right here in Utah, as was a number of my ancestors who were polygamists. In fact, my great-great-grandfather, John W. Hess, was sealed for time and all eternity to four of his seven wives right here in the Salt Lake Temple. Today, I am a single mother of two children. I've had to hack it out as a single parent, alone, working a full-time job in the effort to provide a home and a stable environment for my kids, put food on the table. When I was divorced almost 7 years ago, I didn't have much choice to work full-time. And since I did work and have a career, my kids had a thorough understanding of what a latchkey was because they had to have one tied around their neck for almost a year, with the explicit instructions when they got home from school, you call me as soon as you get home. Do not answer the phone unless it's my cell phone number. Do not go outside. Do not answer the door. Being a kid at my house after school was no fun. You can't even imagine what it must have felt like at 3:40 every day. How agonizing that 10, 15 minutes was until I got that phone call that my kids were home safe. But the panic didn't go away, and the worry didn't go away until I could get home an hour or two later to be with them. Not what you'd call a traditional family, is it? After moving to St. George, I had the wonderful opportunity to get to know a number of families that live in Centennial Park in Colorado City. Being able to observe the dynamics of plural marriage relationships as a single parent is really what makes me come here and speak in support of today. And I'm just going to share an experience. I went out and saw just an absolutely outstanding play that was put on by the school kids of Centennial Park called A Comedy of Errors. It was fantastic. And it was quite late when it ended, so I opted just to stay as opposed to having to drive an hour back home. The next morning, what woke me up is the smell of bacon. Who wouldn't that wake up? And I went downstairs, and one of the moms had already fixed breakfast. My kids were already dressed, fed. They were outside ready to saddle up the horses and go for a ride. And I wandered upstairs and just happened to peek through a door and saw one of the moms snuggled down with her new baby, just spending some quiet time all by herself. She wasn't worried about the other children and didn't have to get up and be everything to everyone. It was awesome. Every Saturday should be like that. I've been camping, hiking, swimming. I've gone to church, and I've attended funerals with the folks in Centennial Park. And I've got to tell you that polygamy is much closer to the definition of traditional family than single parent ever will be. In closing, I hope and pray that what you've heard here today and what you've seen and hopefully felt, that you just take it into consideration. Just ask yourself the question, if you yourself are willing to commit millions and millions of taxpayer dollars, your dollars, to wipe out entire communities, to stamp out a culture that has been a part of Utah tradition for many, many generations. It's time we look for a solution that's going to benefit everyone. Utah and Arizona lost this fight decades ago. Times are changing, precedent is changing, and the willingness to remain silent and persecuted is also changing. I thank you very much. Thanks.
At the conclusion of this PowerPoint presentation in last September, Mark Shurtleff was given an opportunity to make a response. One of the things he said was, "I can go to sleep at night now, not having to worry about this community." And I think after hearing these ladies, you can see why he made that remark. There is just a little time for question and answer. I'd like to ask four of the ladies that have agreed to answer questions to come up and sit up here by a microphone. One thing I'd like to say go ahead and come on up. This is just before the lunch break. We don't have too much time for question and answer, so let's go until it's about another 7 or 8 minutes. And then anyone that needs to leave can go ahead and go. And if it's okay, we'd like to invite the rest of you who want to ask questions to give you a little extra time. So, okay.
I'll try and remember all the issues you brought up, but I'd like to start with thanking you for the interest in our children. Again, We are very concerned about our children. I can't speak for Mark Shurtleff and how he sleeps at night. She's quoting him, and I can't, you know, obviously get into his head, but... And we aren't going to speak for them either. We can't... You see what I'm saying? I can see whatever reading you have done, you have questions, but we cannot answer those. We have no knowledge. I can give you what I've read, but I don't have any knowledge. The other, with our young boys and education accomplishments, what you find is that if... Because we're family, if I'm out earning a degree, someone's out supporting the children and the family. Many of our men, the reason those statistics look the way they do is because they forwent an educational opportunity to support the women in getting theirs. So, you know, it looks lopsided, but the men are there. Well, we have a lot of construction around our area, and it's very lucrative. And I think that perhaps those dollar figures pull at boys. I am in education, and I can vouch for the private high school that where most of these boys attend, and they are cared for, they are looked after, and they are in no way victims of what the lost boy syndrome is.
Yes, sir.
This is just a comment. Comparing Reynolds versus United States, Rosa Parks, I think you would better be served to compare it with the Dred Scott decision. It is very, very unfortunate, and of course I have to be educated firsthand in the subject. The practice of polygamy, I don't find any more odious than anything else that society is supposed to, under the guise of political correctness, to condone. And I find your position today to be very refreshing and enlightening. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to make a comment in terms of the unequal graduation rates.